Sci-Fi Party Line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line. This is your hostess, Kat. Today I have with me Carl.
What's happening, Kat?
I'm awesome.
Awesome.
Awesome. And we have Steph back, Nene.
Hey there. How
are
you guys doing?
We're okay. Awesome. And today we're going to do Hunger Games, the finale of The River, and the finale of The Walking Dead.
Yay.
First, we're going to talk Hunger Games. Well, I don't have any stats today, so I can't butcher the million, billion, blah, blah.
$3 billion in the first weekend is what Hunger Games cost us. No.
No, I don't know. I know it did really well. It did, I don't know, just read the news. You'll figure out it did well. People were trying to compare it to Twilight. There's even some races like, oh, I didn't want certain person to be black and blah blah. So I mean, it's so popular that, you know, ignorant people are saying crazy crap about the cast of characters. And I read the book. Steph, you read the book.
Mm-hmm.
Carl, you do not read. No, I'm kidding.
I read. Now, I did not read the book, but the entire crew that I went with had. So I was properly briefed before and after the movie about the differences.
That's yeah.
That's my Cliff's Notes.
Yeah, that's okay. So I'll start off with my first feelings. Well, I really liked the book. It didn't have aliens in it, but it had, you know, some spaceships or hovercrafts, things like that. So I liked it for that reason. To me, compared to the book, they just left a whole lot of stuff out. It felt a little empty, but I still enjoyed it. So that's what I'm going to lead with. And then I'm going to go right into Stephanie.
Okay, cool. Yeah, this is the first time I've actually talked about this movie since I saw it. And I wonder if it's because I'm a little bit embarrassed. I really wanted to see this movie and was really excited to see it. And I saw it and I liked it, but I'm with you, Kat. Man, they left out what I feel were significant parts or important parts of the book to set up the second movie. And maybe they're going to include it, those kinds of parts in the second movie, but I just don't know. I wonder too if the movie sufficiently explained stuff to someone who just saw the movie cold without having read the book.
Well, that's where Carl kind of comes in, but he's been briefed. So even if people explain stuff to you, you still really don't have a clue if you haven't read the books. How did this feel to you? Was this like a turd movie? Did you like it? What did you feel about it, Carl?
I felt the emptiness as well.
Wow.
Going into this movie with no expectations whatsoever. I wasn't excited. I was not upset about going. I just went completely clean slate in there. The story was unique. The environment was almost interesting.
Wow.
I agree with you because the crew then said, oh, I can't believe they left this out. I said, what? That's what that meant? Oh, and I can't believe they left this out. And I was like, oh, really? That was in there too? So I firmly believe that a film should be able to stand on its own independent of the book, independent of the material that it was from. You shouldn't have to have a cast of readers around you reinforcing the movie with details that weren't there. Because of that, I really do think the movie felt a little light. With some of the filling in from the crew, things made a little bit more sense. But to me, it still felt really kind of thin. So mm-hmm. I thought, you know, I mean, there were a lot of you know, moments in subtleties to the movie that I thought were interesting. I mean, this is the first time in sci-fi I can think of where, you know, basically there was like an Appalachian person was the hero. You know, never mind the girl issue, you know, yay for the girl. But I mean, you know, you got coal miners in the mountains coming out. I can't remember ever seeing that in sci-fi before. And that was kind of no, seriously. I firmly
it was
believe,
unique because it had coal miners.
Look, I believe sci-fi should be for everybody, and I've seen, you know, all kinds of different other sci-fi reaching out to all different kinds of, you know, race groups, ethnic folk, everybody else. Never seen it coming out of Appalachia before. So hey, represent. You know, that was kind of cool.
That's interesting that you say that, because. Yeah. The thing that makes the story is Katniss. I mean, mm-hmm. she is why the story is so good. For me, I've seen stories like that in sci-fi because I gravitate towards those stories. You know, like The Lottery and other dystopian future type books or stories.
These are books. These are not movies, though, right? No, is there movie?
I've seen The Lottery performed, I guess, in a play format, mm-hmm. But I guess I haven't seen it on the movie. But there are lots and lots of movies that have drawn from The Lottery. I just can't name any right now because I didn't write any notes. I never write notes. I'm a terrible student. But anyway, what I will say is, despite the fact that Suzanne Collins borrowed heavily from other science fiction stories, she yes. managed to create a really compelling character in Katniss and in Peeta, and in other sort of ancillary characters like Haymitch. I really enjoyed Haymitch's character after I had read all three books, and even Effie Trinket. I loved her character by the end of the book as well, just because I don't know. It's not because she was such a great person, but just because she did so much for the story to me. Those are instances where the movie kind of succeeded. So like Caesar, the game show host guy, mm-hmm. he really nailed his part. Elizabeth Banks really nailed Effie's character. I wish they had more
Everdeen.
Absolutely, she was so spot on. That is exactly how I imagined her as I read
the loved
book.
Her tacky ghetto nails.
Oh yeah,
how horrible are those nails, and I love them.
Oh my god. And then like the completely dyed, almost bleach, like blonde, platinum blonde eyebrows.
Yeah.
So the funny thing is, I get a lot of people complaining about sort of the pop, like the candy colors of all the wardrobes in the capital city. And
I thought,
you know,
that
how,
was where, the way it
that's
was
how she it. Explained it yeah. in the book. You know, I'm like, that's spot on. They really accomplished that. I was worried that they wouldn't be able to really communicate the relationship between Haymitch and Katniss, and they sort of succeeded on that end by including the notes from Haymitch. But on the other token, I really feel that I really miss that they didn't include Katniss's just inherent sense of him. Like, she could sense what he was telling her by what he was sending and not sending.
Right.
They missed that.
And, you know, I'm really disappointed about Haymitch, and not to cut you off, but I really want to talk a little bit more about Haymitch.
Sure.
I'm really disappointed how they didn't really enforce how much of an alcoholic he was.
Oh, I know.
He didn't barf on anybody. I was looking so forward to that. I was looking forward to the sloppy, miserable drunk, and they just made him as like some guy who, you know, drinks occasionally and he's kind of weird, but they didn't really get in there and get gritty. I want to see Peeta washing the barf off of him in the tub.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to see just a more, or maybe I went to the restroom on that part, I'm not sure. But
no,
it's just
falling off the stage.
Yeah, falling off the stage. I wanted to see Effie's hair, her wig messed up, and they just left out a lot of things with that character to make it just. The book was funny. It had a lot of funny things, and it didn't have to be so serious because it was serious. But I don't know. It just, the Haymitch thing bothered me.
It had several layers. Haymitch wasn't a one-dimensional character.
True.
He was a drunk because he was trying to escape from the completely horrible life he had fallen into. you know, he had been forced to fight to the death, all these people, and then he was thrown into the opulent world of the victor, and he couldn't cope with that but for to medicate himself and with alcohol. And that, I think they just portrayed him as sort of this kind of bitchy, unhelpful character. And Woody Harrelson tried to do that, but I don't think he succeeded as much as I had hoped he would, because it's not that hard to play, you know, a drunk with demons, you know.
I think his hands were tied by what they did. I mean, they didn't let him barf on anybody. They didn't let him fall. We didn't get you know, just the things that he could have done to make you really feel, you know, his horrible state. We saw him negotiating with people. He just looked like a person who drank occasionally and was maybe abusive sometimes. We didn't get that he was just totally out of it. And then when his characters, you know, got a backbone and he was negotiating for the guys in the games, it was just like, I don't know. I mean, that's what it would look like, but I wanted it to look like something else, or I don't know.
Was that like sponsorship montage that
happened? Yeah, that montage. I was just, what is that? I don't know.
You can get some sponsors.
Was that in the book? I don't think it. I don't know. It was too CSI, right? It was CSI montage.
I don't know, but okay. So the thing that bugs me about that is, it's intricate. I mean, it's a really important part of the story that this is a horrific reality TV show. I mean, it's gone beyond Roman times. It's gone beyond that bloodlust and into this sort of hyper reality stardom, like this to the nth degree horrific reality spectacle. And that really wasn't, I don't think that was communicated in the movie as much as it could have been. And then the fact that every move that Katniss did in the book was dictated by, will my sponsors be okay with this? How will the viewers see this move I make? And that kind of thing, where she's not even that kind of person. She's thrown into this foreign world where she kind of has to adapt, and because she is a hunter, she can adapt to these kinds of stressful situations. But in the book, what's so interesting about her character is that she's always calculating, well, if I do this, what will the viewers think? If I do this, you know, because she's trying to survive, and that's just one more component of how she is going to survive. And
did you get that, Carl? Did you feel that?
Okay, well, let me chime in here, because I've been listening very carefully to what you two have been discussing, and for the most part, it's been the book, all right? I mean, just when I watch the movie...
I'm sorry.
Well, listen.
It's hard to separate them at this point for me.
But that's very interesting from a moviegoer's standpoint here, because, you know, is this a new type of film where the film is actually, you know, some sort of cliff note for the book?
I think it is.
And where there's just a sprinkling of the story in the movie, and then you're just supposed to read the book and fill in the blanks, because all of the stuff that you're talking about, the complexity, like I said, without reading the book, it is a lot thinner what is going on now. And I couldn't tell, you know, it was only because I had my, you know, book reading posse there that I had a sense of things. And then I would ask them about it after the movie. Well, did that mean this? And well, did that mean this? So let me, you know, back up and kind of address some of the things. The issues of Hamish, I was able to put together that, yes, he was tortured because of what he had been through. It was his sort of, you know, stress disorder of being coming from whatever district he was in and then living in that virtual world. Totally made sense to me that he was drunk and he was taking that out. You know, he was expressing it that way. So that was
clear. But you didn't get the depth, man.
Look, I'm just saying, you know, with broad strokes here, because clearly, you know, and that's totally one of the biggest challenges
of
trying
theme
to translate.
The movie, broad strokes.
Well, you know, that's one of the greatest challenges of translating things from books to movies. When you read the books, I really enjoy, you know, the inner dialogue or monologue that the person's having. I like to, you know, to feel like I know the character and what they're, you know, what's going on in their mind while they're experiencing things. if you're watching that in a movie, unless they do a crappy voiceover, which is triple worse, then what happens is you just get these brooding looks. You know, it's a dour look, and then you're supposed to infer what the person is
but
thinking.
I think that's wrong, because with the first Harry Potter movie, they went straight from the book. I mean, you can read the book, and you're basically looking at the script. They were so close.
Well,
so that, close. And I thought that maybe, you know, Hunger Games was so popular that they should have split this movie into to two movies, actually. Well, this should have been a part A, part B. Because
I think, I'm sorry for my little, like, peanut gallery comments in the background, but I think that they succeeded in some ways I was reading the book last year, I think, and I knew that they were going to make a Hunger Games movie, and I was reading the book going, man, that's going to be really hard to depict, you know. But a couple of the things that they succeeded at was the use of the game makers, like that whole cool room where you got to
that
see how
cool.
they implemented the effects and how this, that, and the other. And you kind of got to see that, oh, well, so-and-so is doing better, or so-and-so is going off in the woods. We got to drive them back in towards the action. You know,
that was successful.
Yeah, that was very successful. The messages from Haymitch in the little parachutes, that was successful too, because I mean, how are you, like Carl said, if there was a little voiceover like what would Haymitch do, like that would suck so hard. One of the other things that I feel that they could have done to sort of replace internal dialogue is utilize the commentators more, because they utilized Haymitch and Dunkelman or whoever the other guy was.
Well, then it started feeling like Phantom Menace.
Know. They utilized them well, and they utilized them because they kind of had to keep the story moving from an audience perspective. And when you think about it, that's how reality television goes. Somebody commentates, you know, like there's something going on there, and the editors are driving the story to a certain extent, but when it's something's live, like the Hunger Games is presumably live, you kind of have to have commentators. I mean, you can't rely completely on editors. So I thought that was well done, and I thought that was successful. So I feel that some of that could have been utilized for her kind of sense of, you know what, I'm gonna die if I don't play up for the cameras. I'm gonna die if I don't kiss PETA and play into this. And I think that they could have said, you know, oh, this is an interesting story. She might get some sponsors out of this, or, you know, something like that would have helped move the story along for people who hadn't read the book. And maybe because her motivations were not present in the movie, they completely left out the fact that she stomped all over PETA's heart at the end of the book and said that she's playing up for the cameras. You know, she did that basically to survive. And PETA's like, I hate you forever now. Like, completely, his heart is broken. And the end of the Hunger Games movie, that was completely left out. I'm going, well, it's kind of an important thing to start the beginning of the next book. You know, like, it's kind of important to know that PETA has lost faith in her and doesn't like her anymore. And anyway, I thought that was pretty important or pretty incredible that they left out.
I'm going to agree with you that those motivations were very subtle. Now, I mean, I got a sense that, you know, there were external pressures motivating her and PETA, and, you know, that her heart probably was still with Gail back home or whatever. That seemed pretty clear. But all of the other really cool, you know, all the other stuff about her motivation was really totally lost. I got a sense also of her connection with Rue. That, you know, that came out. That was probably the only, and I thought that was kind of forced, but still, It was the strongest bond that I saw in the movie from Katniss to anybody else there. So, you know, that I believe was well done. But the problem is, you know, all of this stuff, like I said, you guys are talking about, you know, all this history and all this background that's in the book. When I watched the movie, Katniss seemed very thin, and I mean, in terms of her motivations, you couldn't tell. I didn't get that strong sense of obligation to the sponsors. I knew that she was, you know, kind of playing up for the camera with PETA, but her being a strong individual really was supposed to come out in other meaningful ways, and that part was thinly told. I just, you know, I just didn't get. The music crescendoed at the appropriate time, you know, and I was like, oh, okay, she's the hero. She's doing big things now. But in terms of feeling it and feeling that it was her choice in a lot of these matters, it didn't quite come out in the movie.
Right.
And so all of the stuff that you guys are talking about, I mean, I heard it afterwards where people were telling me what was in the book and what was in the story. But in the movie, not so much.
I worried about that.
Yeah. And so, some of the other things that I was kind of guessing at, are the districts numerically further out from the main main city than the others?
The capital is District 1, and then it's kind of like spokes on a wheel. That's how I envision.
Yeah.
Where they're miles and miles apart. It's important that they're so separate and siloed.
But are they equidistant from the center? I mean, from the capital, or are they like as you go out like rings, just the further
they're like
out?
They're like rings,
So the rings solar are system, the further.
Like the
okay,
solar.
Yeah, because I was getting that feeling that, you know, because like I said, what was it the District 1 was that the elite team that came out there was, you know, causing all kinds of trouble?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Seemed like because they were so well trained, and you know they had that polished look that they seem to be closest to the capital.
Yes,
you know,
are.
And the further you went out, you had, you know, the projects, then you had the woods, you know. I was like, wait a minute here.
It was like that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, see, again, that was a leap. They don't make that clear at all. I'm just kind of looking at folks and trying to piece this stuff together. So that was interesting. One of the characters I thought was interesting, and I felt a bit of a movement during the story, was Seneca. You know, I had a feeling that from the beginning, Seneca just wasn't quite really down with what was going on. And to see him, you know, kind of responding to things as the story went on and asking Snow those natural questions, like, why are we doing this? Should we give him a break? Does this make sense? You know, and eventually what happens to him. That you could feel a bit of progression in the character, and that was kind of interesting. And I'm sorry that, you know, spoilers, you know, I'm sorry that he's gone. I was hoping to see more of him. You know,
because that beard was so decorative.
That was a little outrageous. The man had a paisley beard. All right, I used to have a paisley beard. So yeah, that was interesting. But like I said, I mean, all of this stuff, I didn't feel, you know, Senna was again. I had a feeling that he was an important character and he was contributing, but I, you know, the little kiss on the forehead, I really wasn't feeling it in the story, that the closeness of what was going on. So I don't know. It just, to me, it did feel kind of, and I got to say, you know, as a dude watching this, all right, so I've enjoyed the commentary and all of the, you know, stories about what's going on. Action-wise, it's a little bit thin. I mean, me and my buddy kind of looked at each other when it was over, and we're like, do you realize the most exciting special effect from Hunger Games was that chick's dress? And we're like, oh, that's wrong.
I was disappointed with the dress because they described it so much better in the book, and I was expecting not like fire wings as she was.
No, I wasn't expecting that.
I was just like, what? It what?
Listen to you two. My point is, there should have been more than just a dress as being the high point in the film.
I like the second red dress though, when she spun, it did the fire thing. That reach my imagination. Another thing that I was disappointed with was the cornucopia, because what was that?
That when was you say like, the cornucopia, do you mean the selection of weapons when they first got out there?
Yeah, and they had a cornucopia, but it was like wrong, and it wasn't big enough.
No, that was not. Yeah, when he said that, I was looking. I was trying to find the cornucopia when it was. I was like, "Well, where is it?" I see you just like, you know, gear on a box. That was what they had outside.
It looked like a raggedy ass half scorpion or something. It was just not what I imagined. Wasn't it golden, Stephanie?
I don't remember that part, but I remember clearly in my mind imagining a cornucopia. Like, that was sort of like some totally high on dentist medication. Some guy was like, okay, that sort of looks like a cornucopia. Like, I don't know. It was weird. No.
Mutations did not look like the people that had died earlier in the Hunger Games.
That was such an important thing that they left out. I'm like, what is that?
From a movie viewer's standpoint, I wasn't sure if the dogs were holograms or not. So I'm watching these things, and I'm trying to, you know, they call them up at the computer. They seem to rise out of the ground, but not in a mechanical way. It seemed like they were rezzed up, you know, and they were chasing people around. Well, of course, I hear afterwards, my friends, oh, they're like genetically engineered. They're wearing the faces of the dead. And I'm like, they look like bulldogs.
Bulldogs. You know? And then the lady that was bringing them up, she was a little too enthusiastic about killing those kids with the damn fake pit bulls.
Well, I mean, she's the master of, you know, the game board.
She was like, let me throw this at him.
I didn't find that off-putting, but I was very disappointed.
No heart.
No, sir. Look, they're dropping trees on people. They're in a, you know, den of killer wasps. You know, oh, but she took joy in the dog. That's not going to put me off of this game.
Well, that was the final straw.
That was, I thought it was kind of neat. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I liked it, but I was just like, oh, can you enjoy that a little less?
Well, the thing is, like, you got nothing else from the action sequences. You just got, like, flickers of this and sort of that.
Somebody's and camera crazy. Shaking to hide. Oh. I mean, you know I was
we
loving
know
it. I was
you
watching
hate
this
that.
In IMAX, and a camera shaking in IMAX. Y'all were killing me with
that.
With
the camera shaking at the beginning when there didn't need to be camera shaking.
Very, very document. They were showing us. It was documentary style. They were just
fire
announcing
the documentarian out. Because that's how a documentary supposed
things,
to look.
Things are very rocky in the Appalachians. They don't have, can't put down a good camera out there.
I like the look of the seam or District 12. Right up until she got her Mockingjay pin from some random lady in the market.
Oh, what was that?
Done with the movie right then. I was just like, okay, red flag. I am done in 13.
All right. So tell me, as a movie watcher, what did I miss? What was the big
she
deal?
She had a friend, and the friend was the daughter of a mayor, and they had this little relationship. Yeah, fine, you know, in retrospect, she wasn't that important, and, it, you know, she could have easily gotten the Mockingjay pin from a lady, but it comes up later on.
It looked
on.
A bit like a gypsy in a carnival. Oh. There you go, little girl!
Stop it. But then later on, like, the Mockingjay has meaning because the friend's mother was in the games or something like that, Stephanie, right?
Okay. I have to say this because I totally agree with you.
Get it out.
Part of what makes the book so awesome is that Katniss is an accidental hero. She doesn't want to be a hero, and it's almost like fate is forcing her to be a hero. And it starts with the Mockingjay pin, because you find out through her relationship with Rue, by the way, the little girl, that Mockingjays were used in the rebellion. Years ago, they were actually engineered by the Capitol to kind of keep an eye on all the districts, but then the people in the districts ended up turning that technology against them and using it for their own means. So that was kind of a symbol of the rebellion. Well,
okay, now look. Let me
tell you
this.
Know what? Oh,
let me tell you now.
She doesn't pick that. The fact that she herself chose that pin pissed me off so much because the whole thrust of the story is that she did not want any of this, that fate is what's making her into this hero. And the fact that she did not get the pin, or that she bought the skin, and she did not have that given to her and expressly told to wear it during the games, try and bring it in as a token. Like, that really wasn't explained. Cinna's part in that was really downplayed as well. Cinna actually is the one who fought to her to get her to wear that, because it could have been construed as a weapon, because it was a pin or it was a pointy thing. And he's like, no, I convinced them that it's a token. And that's important for the next book, the fact that Cinna put that or fought to make sure that.
Okay, now look, I love symbolism, and I think that's very important. I'm tremendously disappointed knowing that now, because I'd seen the posters before the movie came out, and so I knew the pen and the Mockingjay was a significant element to the story. I watched the entire movie, and you don't get that. You don't get the connection. You don't get the strength of the symbolism, other than what Rue said, in which, by the way, all my crew had to explain to me that the Mockingjays were genetically engineered and they were a part of that. They had to tell me that afterwards. I'm like, well, do birds do that? I don't think birds do that, right? You know, so they were, you know, all of this stuff. I mean, for it to have been the logo of the movie, for them not to have taken more time to explain its significance in there, or to not have it given to her by a gypsy in a carnival, but that, you know, to really have some greater significance. I'm feeling cheated by this, and as a moviegoer, I'm feeling like it was a thin portrayal of what was actually going on. And all the folks that went to see it, you know, all the folks that who have read the book are seeing a different movie than what we who didn't read the book saw.
Seeing cliff notes.
Yeah, well, I believe
that. That's exactly what this movie was. It was like you fill in with your brain and you know what's going on, and you're just seeing some sort of
I was trying to fill in with my brain, but there was
hand puppets that kind of represent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I wanted to say one more thing about her relationship with Rue.
Okay.
So she identifies with Rue because obviously she sees her sister, her younger sister Prim, and Rue, and that relationship was actually cultivated more in the story or in the book, but that's fine, whatever. The fact, though, that in the movie they did not include that Katniss went ahead and showed unity in the districts and defied the capital by saying, you know, by making her mark or whatever, her symbol with the three fingers. The fact that they didn't really, I don't think they did that very well at all.
Thank you. Thank you. Because that did not come through. And I was like, what?
And the bread. Oh, the fact that that District 11 randomly seemed to be pissed off that Rue died, and that's why they were rioting, instead of this feeling of unity that Katniss inspired. That was really annoying to me. I know that's not.
That's not even in first book. I don't know why that shit was there.
Very good.
I really don't.
When you watch the movie, it appears that they are upset about Rue. And furthermore, when her buddy shows up toward the end of the film and says that's for Rue, you don't get the feeling that I'm doing this for solidarity of the outliers. He did it for Rue. So that's.
Well, he kind of said that a little bit in the book.
What did you say?
He was saying, you know, that I'm going to let you go this time because you helped Rue out. So that's spot on.
But you're saying that the hand gesture and the other stuff was supposed to be symbolizing unity of, you know, between the two areas.
It's like a peace out, really, you know, because they was trying to tell her, it was solidarity, but you do that when a loved one dies in a funeral or something like that, right, Steph?
The thing is, that was a District 12 symbol that she did, and she did it for Rue. And then the District 11 people noticed that or saw that in the games, and they saved up their money and bought a sponsorship to give her a symbol from their district, which was the bread and the special way. And PETA realizes this and says, oh, that's specifically from District 11. And then Katniss says to the camera, thank you, people of District 11. And that's when you start to realize, oh, okay, so they're setting her up to be the hero, because all of her other stuff was sort of contrived, but the thing that happened with Rue was just natural. She did that instinctively, and that kind of shows when she is emerging as a leader, and she fights that always. She's always fighting the fact that she was a born leader, And I think that I really think the movie would have benefited if they had kept just a couple of those minutes in. I'm sure they went on the editing table floor or whatever, but
this thing was edited to hell.
Yeah.
I really feel like a lot of the movie was lost, and it was a rich story, but the movie made it seem like it had borrowed from all sorts of different stories, and it was sort of meh, and the book was a lot richer than that. Oh, well.
Yeah. And even though we say all of that, it was still good.
Yeah.
You know, it was still good, so we can nitpick it to death, but I still enjoyed it a lot. So
you know what I enjoyed?
Love, hate.
The last scene where he has the berries when President Snow leaves the game maker or master the berries. That's not in the book, but I wish it had been.
Yes, oh, well, shoot, that was
I like
good.
That scene. That's what I told you. I was like Seneca. That's not in
that
the book.
Was, that was well done.
And it was so good. I'm like, you know, that's one thing they did right.
Yeah, that was well done. And then, you know, but then you kind of understand, like, why is Donald Sutherland skulking around being all, what is his motivation? What is his problem? Why is he, you know? Did you feel that, Carl?
He was a personification of the man. I was like, oh yeah, that's him. Okay. He looked like the man, so that's what's going on. All
right.
But that's, you know, that's all I got. If there's something more significant.
Well, no, I mean, that's basically it. But
yeah.
Well, his self-interest is what sort of makes his world go round, right? And so, I think Donald Sutherland really portrayed that well.
I can't believe that man still acted.
I thought he died. Oh, that's so horrible.
Harsh.
No, I'm kind of glancing over a Wikipedia, and they kind of compare this to Ender's Game, which I've been trying to tell people. Yeah, this is like Ender's Game. This is also compared to Battle Royale, which is a Japanese film where they kind of did the same thing with students. They put them in, they had to kill each other in order to, I don't know.
Fight
to the death. And last one is victorious. Mm-hmm. So I think... who wrote this again? What's her name? Suzanne Collins admitted to being inspired by this. I don't have that on record, but someone said that she admitted to being inspired by Battle Royale.
This also reminded me of Stephen King's The Long Walk.
Mm-hmm.
Really liked that book. It's, I guess, when he was under the name Richard Bachman. And it reminded me of Running Man.
Running Man, yes!
Yeah, well, see, I mean, I enjoy those kinds of stories, so that's why I enjoyed this book and now this movie, because even though it's geared toward young adults, and that was a really hard pride pill to swallow, let me tell you, that I had to sit down and read it.
But I think this is more, it's not as embarrassing as saying you read Twilight.
But, harsh, ladies, harsh.
But I'm just saying, I felt better like saying I like Hunger Games and I was excited to see it than like Twilight. I'm still like, I don't want to admit to ever seeing that. This is Hunger's fault for making me watch Twilight and blah blah blah. So I don't know.
Well, the funny thing is, you don't hear people complain so much about the content of the movie versus the content of the books in Twilight.
Don't. It's there, but we just don't listen to it because we can't take those people.
I'm sorry that I kept nitpicking this movie. I will say it's a good movie. It could have been a lot worse, and so I'm really thankful that it stayed pretty faithful to the story. It just it did a lot of things that I just really don't understand why.
Yeah.
I have no idea why they left out some of these things.
Yeah.
Some of the things I can understand, and I'm glad they consolidated, but other things that are really essential to the continuation of the story, I thought, well, holy crap, how are they going to bring that back in, you know?
Well, I think this is a gamble. We don't know how this is going to do. We don't know how much money this is going to make. So we're just going to do the best we can until we, you know, figure out if we have a Twilight on our hands or if we have a John Carter on our hands. So this is probably why they...
it apparently made as much money as John Carter cost to make. Like, oh, its first
that is
weekend.
Embarrassing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like John Carter more.
Yeah, I do. Yes, I will have to say that I like John Carter more than I liked The Hunger Games.
I definitely, hands down, liked John Carter more. Yeah. And it's funny because I didn't think it was as derivative as The Hunger Games, to be honest.
Well, it was first.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it was. So, guys, that's our discussion on The Hunger Games, unless anybody have any last-minute nitpicks that they have to get out.
6 out of 10.
Wow. 6 out of 10.
That's hard.
I usually go 5 out of 5.
Oh.
So, well, I'm just saying for me, because I only think of 5 out of 5, but if you go 6 out of 10, but it would be roughly the same thing, because I would give it, like, I was thinking, like, 2.8 or 3.
Out of 10?
5.
Out of 5.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It's not quite a 2.5, but...
That's a really hard...
If we're going 10, like, yeah, I would go with Carl and say 6. So 6.5.
I didn't want to do the decimal math.
Yeah, I know. I'm just being ridiculous. So, excuse me.
Well, my calculations. So
it's going to be 3.1. Okay, anyway.
I think, yeah, out of a scale of 1 to 10, I'd probably give it around a 3.
Wow. Yeah.
That's
harsh, girl.
Horrible. Jeez.
Out of a scale of 1 to 5, though, I'd give it like a 1.89.
What are you doing? You this can't just awful. Change the scale. Like, oh boy!
Oh my God! I didn't think it was that horrible. The costumes.
Yeah, now that's not. I knew you were going to get excited about the costume, but even the costumes. Come on, dude. We've seen better. We've seen more exciting costumes.
So looking forward to this movie for months and months and months and months and months. And maybe that's what did it for me. The fact that it did not meet my expectations, which it was impossible to do because I had been looking forward to it for so long. But I really and truly think that they could have done a much better job with the material. And instead, they did this homogenous, you know, can't offend anybody.
People were offended. Like, they didn't want Rue to be black.
Except for their faces.
Because she was described as dark skin in the movie, in the book, so I don't understand what that is about. The reason why I wasn't thrown off by Senna is because before I read the book, I knew he was cast, so he's always been. What's his face to me?
Lenny Kravitz,
yeah. It ain't over. Sorry. Yeah. Always been the Kravitz.
Okay, yeah. I was
concerned about Jennifer Lawrence because I did not like her Mystique in X-Men United or whatever the hell that movie. What was that called? X-Men 60s. What was it? First class.
No, but you know what? In Winterbone, she was amazing.
Yeah, I heard about that. That name bothers me.
Yeah, she was totally amazing in that movie, and I really feel like this movie could have been a lot worse, but for the actors, Jennifer Lawrence and
Liam Hemsworth.
He was in that. No, he was like in the movie for like 2 seconds.
It was
with
a glorious 2 seconds.
Oh my God, he has this poochy duck mouth that I can't handle.
What? You shut your mouth!
I will shut my poochy duck mouth.
Brother. That's Thor's brother.
So wrong.
But you know what though? I'm glad that Peeta wasn't this breathtaking sex pot. I'm glad that he wasn't. I mean, he was
so
just
Canadian
like,
and plain. Ugh, PETA.
Well, he was kind of like Seinfeld's girlfriend that looked good in certain lights, but not.
Like, he had man hands.
He had tree hands.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Anyway.
Wasn't he in that Vampire's Assistant or something?
What?
PETA. Did y'all torture yourself with that?
I did watch, but I can't remember anyone in it. I know what you're
saying. Oh, he was in Cirque the Freak. Yeah, well, that's the same thing, Vampire Assistant. Yeah, right. He was in that.
I
just admitted that I watched that. But, whatever. It's all good. Anyway, we are going to leave the Hunger Games because I'm pretty sure we can nitpick about it for a few more minutes until you barf. So we're not going to do that. We're going to move to The River.
Yeah.
I think Carl is responsible for us watching it. No.
Whoa, don't put me on that.
I'm kidding. It's me. It's my fault. So the last time we talked about this, it was two episodes until the finale. And between now, then and now, we finally got to see the dad come back. And his first words were, "How was my funeral?" Which was so weird. And he was like capping zombies or whatever was going on.
Cocoon dad rises from the wall.
It was just really ridiculous, but I enjoyed it.
Oh my God. All I could think of was catchphrase when it ended.
Good. Yes, that's the right answer. That's the right answer.
What are y'all feeling about that? Well, you know, we can combine the two finale and the second to the last finale or whatever if you want to go there, but
well, we got to do, you know, the Doom episode, you know, the one that was just like Quake, watching Quake with the flashlight, zombie coming, pow, take out the zombie, take out the zombie.
Oh, yeah, that was weird.
Charles spoiled that for me on Twitter. Thank you, sir.
I saw it.
Oh, so mad at him, but anyway, I didn't yell at him this time. But yeah, I thought it was a cool direction for the show to go in. It was well done for this show. I was kind of like, what's going to happen here? What's in the weird room with all the bodies? And he went in there and looked through all the bodies and barfed. And it was just ridiculous. And I didn't think that they were going to find the dad because we always in the episode were not finding dad. But we actually found dad and he was in a cocoon. And he was alive in the cocoon. And like, who put him in the cocoon? Where did the cocoon materials come from? Where was the dog all this time? Why didn't the dog go on the boat with them?
Because there was a zombie. Because German dude's girlfriend was on the boat. That's why the dog didn't go.
Is that what it was?
That's a good explanation.
I like that.
Exactly why he didn't get on the, because there were still zombies on the boat.
Wow.
That dog's like, I'm not dumb.
Well, how'd y'all feel about that episode? Come on.
You know, it was a lot better than the finale, I gotta say that.
Yeah.
It was good. They do a really good job of building up suspense and making you sort of sit at the edge of your seat. But the zombie episode, I think what I really didn't like about it, and by the way, there's nothing more crazeballs than a zombie movie premise, okay? But this premise took the cake. It was like angel Native Americans or angel South American tribes people that get their wings cut off in this cure for cancer or something happened that way. And then like, what the hell is with the cocoon? How does that fit into the zombie story? Not sure at all. How did Emmett Cole like escape the zombie people in a cocoon? What happened? There's no
He was saved by a flock of dragonflies that just lashed him to the wall. They lashed him to the wall.
And why are there angel people in the Amazon? Why did this happen? I was just kind
And then
of
why
like,
did the zombies take a nap? Why do they have nap time?
Oh, what is that? What is that? And the
why are the zombies have nap time? And it made me want to pull my hair out. I was like, that's convenient. All zombies have nap time. What do they? Is this part of Romero zombies? Or is this 28 days later zombies? What is that?
They were still kindergarten zombies.
We had to lay out graham crackers for them. They do this every once in a while.
Graham crackers.
They get cranky without their juice is what happens.
It's weird. I don't, and then I just don't understand. And I don't understand how Lady from Paranormal Activity, what was her name? Cricket or whatever. I don't understand how she managed to survive just like Newt from Aliens. Like,
oh, yeah.
Somehow made it. I don't know. That
even in the last episode. Okay, whatever. But
she wasn't I don't know what happened to her. Oh no, they said they were going to drop her off.
Oh, remember? Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Annoying 24 wife lady Tess said,
you know what? We're just going to leave you because my husband was a jerk and we have it on camera, so it's your fault.
She ended up being better off because at the end they get like trapped by an ever moving maze.
Did she actually get left off or did she get eaten? Didn't somebody get dragged off the deck? Remember, someone was like sitting out there on a guitar case, like, oh, I'm just going to sit on the deck in the middle of the dark. I don't know what's going to happen. And then, blah, you know, and then you see a splash of blood.
Man, that was her.
Is that what happened?
Well, you're right, Carl, because, like, who did the German zombie lady had to eat somebody?
There you go. Because, like, where did they drop her off? They didn't drop her off. She got ate, right?
So she's not better. Well, better off dead, but, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like we remember it because it was good.
No, it's just this show's ridiculous. All right, no,
it's ridiculous in a way that's kind of entertaining.
It was entertaining until the last couple episodes, where it's like, oh,
it's right on the edge of entertaining. It's almost annoying. I am really just, I tried to hang with it.
I can't believe it.
No, look, I told you, look, you know me, I will give stuff a try, and since this was a miniseries, I hung right in there all the way to the end so that I could give a solid, well-rounded evaluation.
Who are we kidding? This was never going to get a second season. This was going to be the complete series, The River, always.
It ended on a cliffhanger, though. Let's talk about that.
Of course it ended on a cliffhanger. That was ridiculous. I expected
to
hear...
If
they'd hooked left and seen Gilligan and crew, that would have made just as much sense. Just as much sense.
Well, I was like, oh, now we're going to have an exorcist because crazy got the brouhaha and she dealt with the stupid cards and she's going to shake like she's doing a voodoo thing and cut her, you know, Terry's or Tess's arms, whatever, and brought him back to life, but brought him back to life with a demon, and then
undead zombie son.
You had to talk to him to like reach your son, talk to your son.
Go into the light, Carol Ann.
Yeah, it was just so. We could have ended at the seventh episode. Like the eighth episode was so unnecessary.
What was that one?
This finale episode was so.
Oh, that was only eight? Gosh, it made it feel like I sat through at least 12 episodes.
It's the eighth and final, the one where we found the dad, where he was like,
Oh,
that just like, dude, really, that's the first thing you say with how I'm. Oh, that hurts.
Okay. Well, okay, so I'm really pissed off that an exorcism was the finale. I mean, what's more interesting to me is that. They can't get out of the Amazon, and they're feeling completely trapped, and you know what's going to happen to them, and you know that could have made for a much more interesting story, in my opinion. And instead, they had zombie exorcist kid. Like, what the hell? I mean, the fact that he died, I was like, ooh, ballsy, awesome.
Yeah,
Then I thought, oh crap, he's gonna come back because there's magic out there.
Dad's catchphrase implied a hamminess that let me know that boy was coming back. I mean, he could have come back so many other ways. And you know, again, I was thinking, he's not coming back. That day they killed us. I agree. I was like, wow, that's really bold. But then I remembered catchphrase. Oh, he's coming back. Something's gonna happen. He's coming back. I can feel the ham. I know it.
Oh, Carl.
Even cool the way he came back, where he was kind of baptized in the water. Came back to the dead.
Jesus-cician, if you will.
The anti-Christian baptism, and he came back from the dead, and you knew. I mean, it was so lazy. Everybody's like, you just may not like what you ask for. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I can't handle this anymore. And then he comes back. He's all pissy and weird. And
don't forget horny. He was horny. Bro, don't forget that part. Hey, baby, you know, I've been thinking about you for a long time now. And
I was like, I love you, Dad. And it's like, Dad's like, oh, hell no.
That's not- all I know.
I was like, that's weird.
Right? Well, I love when they killed off Fuzzy Beard guy, like the little...
Oh, yeah. I hated that guy.
But it was interesting because the video equipment didn't show that. They showed him walking away. And there was that moment where I thought, well... Is this one of those things where he just hallucinates that he killed the guy?
It's all a dream. Yep, that got me too. I was like, what are they doing? What are they doing?
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like this should have been another episode and not the finale. The finale should have wrapped things up more, and instead it was kind of like, dun, 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 they're all doomed, you know?
Well, come on. If they'd wrapped things up neatly, there would be no option for a second season, which we're all dying for.
Nobody's gonna, they're not renewing that. They're not.
There ever was an option for renewal, though. I thought it was always meant to be a miniseries.
They had a feeling
that it was going to be such a big hit that they wanted to leave the door open.
Right.
How many more contrived stories could they come up with?
I mean, you could throw everything in the kitchen sink out there. I mean, look.
You're just going to repeat everything that happened in the first season with different people in the second season and in a house or...
You know, when I laughed...
In space.
I laughed when you said there was going to be... clown Amazon people. I laughed like but then after that zombie episode I thought, oh my god,
it may just happen.
Amazon people.
The dog was really that girl's dad back, you know, it just everything, they could just keep trying.
I was upset by that because one, it was a colossal waste of time. the first few episodes were fun and new and exciting, and even the first few minutes of the finale episode were interesting. They were interesting, and then it just became this like parody of itself. It was just horrible, and I thought, oh man, they're gonna end it by they're never gonna be able to find their way out because it's found footage, right? So you're kind of like, oh, they've gotta wrap this up by saying the people were never found again, you know, but for the footage. And then I'm starting to realize, oh, this is not gonna end well.
Then there's gonna be people that go back out to find them. And then we're going to do this whole miserable thing again.
It was interesting. I'm glad I hung in there for a few of the episodes, but the other episodes, I kind of want my hours back.
I will look forward to it pretty much every week. It was, it had an exciting factor to it, but the last episode was really a letdown. The zombie one was interesting because you still didn't know what was going to happen. We still hadn't found Dad, so that's what was interesting.
But the angel people!
We're never going to... It was like, are we on X-Files? I mean, what are we doing?
People provided the cure to cancer.
When they was talking about the cure to cancer, I was just like, that's just... silly.
Yeah, look. I could tolerate the cure for cancer thing because, of course, why else would a big lab be out in the Amazon? That I can live with.
Well, they're not trying to cure cancer. They're trying to like do something else.
They're trying to exploit the angels.
Well, that was that's the ulterior, because they went there for cancer, but then they found out they're angel people, and that's, you know, the more stuff.
And then they put one in like a big vat of water, and
you got to put a sample in a giant vat like that. It was either that, or it was going to be one of the face huggers from Aliens is going to be in there. Same thing. Got to do that.
Oh, now I want to watch.
And the source. Predator. I really wanted to know what the source was. I really did.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
The toilet in the middle of the Lost Island.
Oh, dear God. I think it was.
Yeah. Oh, well. It's over. Bye, River.
I knew I was going to be pissed off. Because the thing is... When you start a series with that kind of questioning and you know, the whole Paranormal Activity thing, they do a great job of building the tension and setting up questions. The problem is, at some point, you have to answer them in a way that matches the excitement of asking the questions. And I was just like, they're not, unless they're really, really good. Very rarely have I been able to see a show or a series or a movie that'll set up a question as intriguing as what they had done and then give you a solid answer in the end. And for them to go, it just splintered in all these different directions, and it didn't answer the questions. I had totally forgotten that we were supposed to be looking for the source. You brought it, I was like, oh, that's right. There was
supposed to be looking for the dad. The dad was supposed to be looking for the source. The dad says that the source was not there. We shouldn't look. We shouldn't go looking. So he learned his lesson about looking in all the wrong places. That's why we don't need to know the source.
I saw what happened. You just tell me what happened. That doesn't make sense, right? I know.
I'm just making sure you understood, because maybe you missed it because you were dozing off.
No, that's not helping.
I agree with most of what you're saying, Carl, except for sometimes unanswered questions are really powerful. And, you know, I think that if they had kind of done away with the whole last exorcist kind of feel in the episode and kind of explored more the horrible, terrifying feeling of being trapped in the Amazon forever, that could have been cool. And then it could have been a bleak ending. I would have been totally happy. They should have left the dude dead. Right then and there, if they had left that guy dead, I would have been, oh, I can't believe this isn't going to a second season. That was so awesome. It would have been completely different. You know, they would have taken some chances. But here they just took such a lazy way out, and there was no creativity in anything that they did, and everything was half-assed.
I thought the zombie, shoot 'em up was weak, because only because
you're a little too hard on
Listen. We have seen zombies already. We've seen them done much better.
These zombies took a nap. That's the different. They're different.
Zombies are not an improvement.
Needed juice boxes. Human juice boxes, and then they wake from their nap.
If I was a writer for this show, and halfway through production, I saw Walking Dead, I wouldn't have the balls to try to bring out my own crappy zombies. I'd be like, okay, we got to rewrite this. We got to come up with something better.
But they weren't really zombies. They were just infected.
Oh, that is not a better excuse at all. That is not good. All zombies are infected. All zombies are infected. That is not out. So I would have just said, okay, stop the presses, and I would have written something totally different, because you just can't. Everybody's doing zombies now. You can't do it like that.
There's only one show.
Everybody's
doing zombies.
Dawn of the Dead and all that stuff.
Well, that came before. What are you saying, Stephanie? What are you saying?
I said the zombie market is pretty saturated. I mean, there's lots of
one show. Seriously.
Resident Evil.
Yeah,
28 Days Later.
That's zombie movies.
28 weeks later,
the same amount of zombie movies as it always is. We just got the one show, and everybody, it's zombie mania.
No, look, I was, when I saw that was coming, I was a little wary, because, we've seen zombies, and I'm like, what can you do with a zombie? Bam. They showed me, if you're going to bring zombies, do something new with them. Don't give me the same old type of crap.
You know what? We're talking about The Walking Dead. Let's leave the river unless anybody has any.
Yay! Let's get on some real zombies. I like my zombies eating people and not juice boxes. All right, so come on, let's get the real zombies now.
Bring it. So one thing I'd like to say first about The Walking Dead, because I totally shot Stephanie down early on. She was so into the zombie herd. She was like, "Where are they going? What's that about? Why are we doing that? That means something." I was like, you know what? You're just reading too much into blah, blah, blah. And with the finale, we see that the zombies were following in a helicopter to some weird place, and they were being herded, what looks like, to maybe some prison or something, to their death. In the middle of their herding, they hear, people on the farm cutting up and shooting and doing all this wreck, and they got sidetracked to the farm. So I just wanted to say, Nene, that I'm stuck in and dug in your nails and kept going on about the zombie herd, because that kind of paid off. And Carl, what were you going to say?
Okay, so I had some questions about the zombie herd, because I was equally, wondering about the history, the background of the zombie herd. Now, help me understand this, because what it looked like to me in that episode was they saw the helicopter and like with some kind of crazy zombie inertia, you know, they saw the helicopter and the sound and they just went west, you know, and they just kept going west until something turned them right. You know, it was so, but see, the question is, you know, I appreciate the zombie herds. There were more than the single helicopter's herds going through. Remember that the first herd on the highway?
That's what I'm talking about. That herd was the same herd because they showed them. No, because that was because they went by the same car on that same road. They started from Atlanta. We saw the remains of the horse.
No. Look. The herds, there were waves of them. Before they left the road, before they lost the little girl, and when they first broke down on the street, and they were like, oh, the streets are clear. And then wave one went through. And then they were like, oh, we got to hide. I don't know what's it. Then wave two went through. So we saw.
But they kept herding them. That's what I'm saying. There's several herds. You can't just herd stuff one time.
Wait. So I'm trying to understand. Do you believe that there were multiple helicopters dragging zombies to a location, or just the particular team that we saw was distracted by the helicopter? Because the other thing is, I don't recall seeing that many helicopters throughout the whole series.
That's,
you know, because like
true.
I said, there on that street, there were herds.
It was one event.
So, and that's what I'm trying to figure out. Were we watching? Well, hang on now, because I'm trying to figure out, were we watching a crazy butterfly effect kind of thing where they were telling us that this one herd had been, you know, there were other herds, but this particular one that we saw that came to devastate the farm, were we watching their history? You know, it was like, this of all the zombie herds, this one followed the helicopter, and it just so happened that the gunshot was.
That's what it felt like to me.
Okay, now
that's
I got
because
that.
They showed Atlanta, and then they showed this whole thing, and they showed Rick's horse, decomposing in the street.
Okay, I got that, but the point is, and I'm with Steph, I'm a little bit curious because I believe that there are more than just that wave. I believe that there are other
Yeah,
so I'm curious as to what. So I thought that this particular wave of zombies, we were following the story of just this rogue team that it was, you know, they heard something and that started this wicked chain reaction that led this posse to our team on the barn. So I'm still curious about the herding. I'm still curious about how they move like that, but I thought that what we saw in this particular episode was just the story of one particular herd led by, you know, just by chance, by, you know, the helicopter and then veering off with the gunshot. That's what I thought.
So you don't think, so you're saying you don't think that the herd that they encountered on the road before is the same herd, or you do?
Because they had two herds at that time, and that was months prior. You know, had Carl here, had the girl gone. That was months prior.
Yeah, so, but they took a detour off into the woods, and the herd stayed on the
that
road.
That herd got to them at the same time that their car broke down. There were two herds right then. What I'm saying,
were there two herds? I thought it was just the one herd.
No, that wouldn't
have
been a herd.
You were defending the herd. Jump in here about the herd, because
I'm just interested by your conversation.
Because I'm really interested in, you know, what motivates the zombies. All right, that's how we roll with Walking Dead. There's significance to everything. They tend not to leave loose ends. So,
I think I kind of go with it. There's the two herds. So there's one wave, but there's only one helicopter. But there's only one helicopter that we've seen. So there might be a continuous herding of. What? I don't know.
I'm just
guessing.
Oh no, are you guys not even excited about the helicopter?
Yes, I'm excited about the helicopter.
We're getting to the helicopter. But then again, at what? When was the helicopter? We still haven't quite got a timeline on that yet.
No, so, but the thing is that the zombies. I think there were two herds or more. I mean, more than one herd. And I think that they're developing this migratory pattern because they're going to the same place as the other one. And then the fact that the helicopter is totally significant because either they are doing, as Kat says, they are sort of corralling these animals or leading them up to somewhere that they want to be led to.
Or the next logical conclusion, zombie pilots. I got you. No, I'm with you on this.
What? Nobody thinks that. Nobody thinks that.
Zombie helicopter pilots.
They could be saying, you know, whatever it is, whoever is still alive and still has the capability to use a helicopter, it could be completely just chance that these particular zombies saw the helicopter and were distracted by something shiny and went. It could be that, because I wouldn't put it past the writers, because it seemed to me, the finale of the show, it seemed to me that all of these sort of events, these events that happened by chance sort of added up to this culmination at the scene with Shane getting shot by Carl, like this extremely important moment. And so it could be totally by chance, but I prefer to believe that it is some horrible, like, other plot that I'm excited to.
You're killing me. Get the plot out. What do you suspect?
I think that there's a significance in the fact that we see this sort of prison or whatever it is.
Yes.
See that? And you know, it's kind of implied that this helicopter is coming from the prison, or maybe not. Maybe that's just something. But anyway, that's one thing that The Walking Dead is good at, is ambiguity. And so you don't know. You are always asking questions. But to me, I would be extremely excited if they were either observing these herds, these migratory herds, or they were purposely leading over to the other side of the state. I cannot wait to find
out. Oh my god, you are so hilarious. I'm like over here like, oh my god, I can't breathe. Oh my god, she needs to breathe. I need to breathe. Oh my god, somebody needs to breathe. I'm fanning myself. Oh my god, Walking Dead. Ah! Okay, sorry.
I love this show so much. And the finale was so up.
They did some house cleaning though, didn't they? Of cast members.
Oh, yeah.
It was just like unnecessary. Don't need him. Screw her. It was just that they were just wiping the deck clean with people, you know.
Rest in peace, Dale, Shane, the son that we never knew his name.
Timmy, whatever, Timmy.
Yeah, Jeb or whatever, yeah.
Jeb. Old lady who was she a daughter?
Patricia.
Was she a daughter or what was she?
She was Pudgy's wife. Pudgy.
Oh, like, yeah.
Pudge, right. Yeah, so she needed to die.
Wouldn't she die in the best way ever? Like, just coming out of her vein or her artery, and you're just like, oh, that's disgusting. And then the fact that you're not sure if what's your face, the annoying girl, is like, can't let go because she doesn't want to let go, or she can't let go because Patricia is just death gripping her. Oh, it's so classic, amazing.
And strangely, T-Dog's still kicking.
T-Dog's still kicking. T-Dog. Herschel's still kicking. I thought he was going down with the farm.
Oh no.
I totally thought he was going down with the farm. I thought my daughter was going to die.
I am not going to point out the stereotype of the scared black man running off in a truck. Someplace. I'm not even going to address that.
To protect them.
I ain't going back there to see no zombies.
He was trying to protect them by not leading them back to the thing.
You know what
he was doing was smart. He was not being cowardly. He was trying to get them away.
Had a meeting point. Everybody was not going back to the barn. They were trying to get him to go back.
But you know what? He was in shock, and he needed them to say, we need to go back to the meeting point. And he was like, oh, okay, fine. You know?
Big old T-Dog was in a truck, and he's afraid. Glenn was rocking the Prius, bouncing zombies off the hood, you know? And he's like, let's go. I was like, come on, man. You got to man up, T-Dog. Man up.
Wait, no. T-Dog was the sane person in that scene. He was absolutely sane, and I'll tell you why. Because
people didn't have a plan before this all went down. They just were like, let's all get in the car and shoot people and waste gas. Like, that's
it. And drive around in circles, which I thought was really
bad. By hanging out of the car, capping people.
Sure, I see Carol is only 8 feet away, but I'm going to drive in a circle and then away from her. That's strategy. That's a good idea.
I'm so surprised and annoyed that she's still alive. I wanted her because I'm like, what is she doing? I'm bored. Kill her.
I am too. But I want to say, they didn't have a plan. They didn't have a meeting spot. They all guessed. That was all a guess that they were going to meet in the spot where they left food for Sophia. Nobody said, hey, by the way, after we execute this stupid-ass plan, we're going to meet at this spot. Nobody said that. So T-Dog was totally saying, he's like, I don't think so. I'm sad that I have to live with you, Lori, because you are annoying, but also I want to keep my life. That's totally sane.
Lori, so when Shane was detailing the events that happened between him and Shane, and at the end, Lori's reaction, I've just not cared about her all this time because everybody hates her already, and I just like, eh. But now I hate her because, like, your man, you did the Lady Macbeth thing and whispered in his ear about Shane, and you pushed all this stuff to happen, and then when it happens, you treat him like he's a monster. What type of person are you?
Yeah. I mean, shoot, Rick was becoming more Shane.
Exactly.
You know, that's the man she wanted. So, look, that's how.
This is no longer a democracy.
Yep.
Catchphrase.
But his was cool. His was cool.
It was. But, yeah, I was really disappointed by her response to him, and I really want her to die. I'm ready for it.
She's not going to die. Come on.
I'm ready for her to die. I know, but I'm ready for it.
Her response was interesting in that you're not sure if she's upset that Shane died or if she's upset that Carl had to witness it. It's probably both, to be honest, but she's probably going to say, I'm sorry, I was just upset that Carl had to do that, that you put Carl in that position. But really and truly, the audience knows that's probably because she feels something for Shane or felt something for Shane, and that she's pissed off that Rick did that. I myself as an audience member was like, what the hell? Could you please pick a feeling and go with it? I mean, please. But
because it's like, you're not complex. This is not complex. You're not impressing me. You're not deep or whatever. Get over it.
Right. I do feel that her character is probably complex, but that it's not interesting enough. I mean, she's probably going for a complexity, but it's not interesting enough. Yeah.
It's not worth our dudes' lives. That's all.
It's not. It's really not. But I'm really glad Shane died. So excited.
I miss Shane already. He was so ridiculous. So you never knew what he was gonna do, and I kind of like that. And then he had his weird southern accent that was so ridiculous. I just miss him already and his stupid hair and everything. So my favorite line of the night was, Christ promised resurrection of the dead. I just thought I thought he had a little something different in mind. Oh, man, that was just so good.
And then he lived, man. The old man made it. That was awesome. That was awesome. He's still kicking, too.
Yeah, that was just such a great line.
Yeah,
that kind of fleshed out Herschel for me a little bit more when he's standing his ground doing a little Bill Paxton. You want some of this? Come here! You want some of this? And he's like shooting him. I thought, well, okay, I didn't really like you from pretty much the day one, but now I'm sort of getting you, you know?
I had a feeling. You know, I knew he was going to stand by his barn, which is why I'm shocked that he lived, because, you know, I really thought that that was going to be his last stand and that was going to be it. But no, man, he's still kicking, still representing.
And still wearing a blazer.
You have to dress your best in post-apocalyptic times. Yeah.
Those are his funeral clothes.
Maybe.
Oh, man, it was so good. I loved, Rick had all these speeches, but they were somehow not as annoying as all the other speeches that were in this whole season.
Well, because he was upset and he was fired. I killed my best friend for you people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Man was upset. He was a little irate Because they were not giving Rick any love after all this. I mean, look, think about all the stuff that he'd been through, all the junk. You know, he's tried to keep this raggedy team together. And then you know, as soon as they sit down in an open place, they're like, I don't like the way you're running things, Rick. I think we should take a vote.
You hid that from us. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Rick is just trying to keep the posse together. So, yeah, they're hard.
What are they going to do with that information, by the way?
Yeah, exactly. It's not going to make much
of
a
difference. Well, A, you'd say, well, you know, maybe I won't commit suicide because I'm going to come back as a zombie anyway, so screw it.
Yeah.
But also, Rick wasn't sure if that was true or if that was just
he said as much.
Yeah.
I mean, so they shouldn't be that mad at him that he didn't actually know or validate that it was true until he saw something happen for his, you know, with his own eyes.
And who wants to believe that? Who wants to believe that anyway?
Like, I know.
Yep.
Nobody wants to believe that. You need evidence of that.
Yeah, that felt a little forced, to be honest. That the fact that everybody's pissed off at Rick, like, what? Why? For what reason are you pissed off at Rick?
Especially you know? Carol. She didn't do anything.
What was that?
Shut it.
Oh, I don't want her to die before she makes out with Daryl, though.
Ew. That's a nasty mix right there.
Why? She looks older than she is. She's actually really pretty, but her ridiculous haircut makes her look, I don't know.
Yeah, she does look a little older. But man, she's got a little fire in her. She needs to get laid.
Oh my god.
Daryl, I want that to happen and then she can die. Okay,
ew. That's what?
Awesome. And then like he can go back to feeling again and not trying to be a hard ass. That's how that's gonna go down.
But guys, we haven't talked about the absolutely most coolest moment ever. In the finale.
Hey, we don't know what her name is. I don't know what her name is. That's the problem. I'm excited, but I just don't know what's her name.
And then we don't know who it is or who they're going to cast because they didn't show anything.
Well, we do now. We do because they gave it away in the Talking Dead segment afterwards.
I didn't watch that.
Yeah.
I didn't watch that. Don't spoil season 3 for me. I know is Andrea, I was like, oh, I know she's been annoying, but I don't want her to die. I don't want her to die. And I love that it was paralleled that her struggle to get out of the forest was paralleled by the struggle to get away, the group's struggle to get out of harm's way, and she's getting tired and you know exhausted, and their cars are running out of gas, and it was such a cool juxtaposition. But I didn't really care about them. All I cared about was Andrea. I wanted her to make it, and then just when you feel like she's gonna die, crazy lady
with a sword.
You know, I really need some explaining why carrying zombies on a chain is useful. Besides the fashion accessory that is, you know, armless zombies on your chains, that mess has got to have some kind of plausible explanation.
Because it's ridiculous.
Is crazy.
Why are you doing that? Because why aren't they eating you? What's going on?
No, it kills the scent. She's walking around with them because
I thought that, but why aren't they eating her?
Yeah,
because she cut out their tongues or their mouths or something. We didn't see their faces.
You don't need to have arms to want to bite somebody.
You don't. But
maybe they were gagged or something.
In addition to cutting off their arms, she probably messed up their mouths too.
Zombie gums. Zombie
I'm
trying
serious.
To gum you. I'm bad.
That's a good idea, but I think that
chains would make some noise.
I don't care. If you have two undead people walking around you, then I think that's a pretty good strategy to keep other zombies away. I really and truly
it
do.
It seems risky. Like if I didn't see those zombies' mouths gag, but I hope they are because and even if they aren't, they're probably steadily like working at the gag because I'm gonna get this meal back here. Like,
oh, no.
Aren't they like right up on her ass because they want to eat her? Why they have so much distance between? That doesn't make sense. It is not plausible. I'm sorry.
How you gonna be a ninja sneak attacking when you're dragging two zombies behind you too? That's got to impact your ninja agility.
I hope they're like genetically altered, or she did. I don't know what she. Maybe they're hovering and they're not actually alive. I don't know, but I'm not buying it. But it looked
she anyway. It
off,
looked cool.
She could have cut off their jaws. I mean, what do they need jaws for? You know, like she could have. I think she did. I think. Well, I mean, we didn't really see them. They were. We just saw silhouettes, and the only obvious thing we saw was their arms were cut off. But
well, I'm looking forward to the zombie science. There's got to be an explanation. I mean, besides it's like rockin' cool, there's got to be a reason why that's.
Oh, and the fact that they're already infected is awesome. That is so cool.
That is not cool. That was just a major revelation.
It just adds to the hopelessness of this situation. There's no rest even in death.
I mean, I don't think it was airborne. I really don't. I think that probably somehow they all got infected before. And I think that hopefully season 3 will start to reveal a little bit of that. Like maybe they put something in the water, maybe they did something in that sort of greater Atlanta area to these people, and that's why they're all infected. I don't know. I'm so excited to find out. I can't wait. I love this show so much. Yeah. It's so
it is great. And wasn't it a beautiful combination of action and drama and tension and suspense? I mean, this is how you do it in terms of putting these elements together in
but
a way.
They starved us the whole season. That's why it was so good. That. I mean, they strip-teased us. They tickled us with a feather.
I'm going to say it was half the season because it wasn't so bad.
You're saying that in retrospect, dude.
No, I'm counting episodes back now. I mean, if you think about when things started really getting bearable again, because I agree, you know, we didn't like them hanging out on the farm that long, but they had really started to make things interesting. They had the little away mission. They had the crazy. No, you know, when they went into town and they picked up the crazies, you know, and then they got the guy and then the dilemma with him. Even though they were still on the farm, that stuff was interesting and it was building to something. About the time they started, you know, the excursions, it got a little bit more. And okay, you know, let's not forget our zombie in the well. That was a special moment for the team. Yeah, that was just that. See, remember what I'm always talking about? If you're gonna do sci-fi or fantasy or whatever you want to call this, do something you don't see elsewhere. Tell stories that you can't. To have the dude dropping into the well. That was just nasty-tastic right there.
Nasty-tastic. How horrifying is it to know that that water is probably completely contaminated now?
Oh, yeah. You don't want it.
That source of water.
Probably. Yeah, it's contaminated.
I probably would have thought it was contaminated before half the zombie went back in. But
yeah, no, I don't want my water, you know, my water with zombies steeped in it days, months, how long has it been in there? It's like, is that that's Earl Grey you're serving? No. I had something extra this week. No.
Oh, my goodness.
So there were moments. You know, I agree. I thought it was going to be a little more boring on the farm, but they pulled it out in the end. That was
in the end.
There were a lot of essential character leaps, I think. I think that there were a lot of monologues, and they kind of I got weary of the monologues, but the characters were going through a lot this season. They had time to contemplate their situation, really. Mm-hmm. They had time to go, oh, when are we ever going to really be safe? And that's very interesting, because they're not only dealing with the threat outside, they're also dealing with the threat, you know, within the group and the threat to themselves, you know, to their psyche. That's interesting too. And I was okay with that. The only thing that I did not like about the second season was taking forever to come around about Sophia.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. Sophia was just too long.
But it was so exciting. It was exciting, though, at the end.
Let me tell you, that little mid-season finale was amazing.
And isn't it cool? That's the other thing. You know, when you're used to watching TV shows and you're watching series, you can feel a rhythm of how things go, and you have expectations about it. You know, you know what I'm saying? It's like you can feel when the end of the season is coming, and so there's a certain, you know, okay, here comes the crescendo here. But to have Sophia in that moment, like in the middle, like that, you know, it created like a second little arc in there, and it made things interesting and unexpected. That's fun, and it's different, and I like to see, you know, them shaking it up a little bit in terms of how they're telling the story. So just yet another win, Walking Dead, yeah. Doing new stuff. I like
this
that.
How you do a finale, The River. That's how you do
it. Yeah, yeah.
That's how you do it.
I will say though, one of the qualms I have with Walking Dead is they spend so much time on certain characters. And other characters are like, yep. You never really see them. T-Dog especially, but not
poor
just T-Dog.
T-Dog. Mm-hmm.
Not just T-Dog, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, Daryl's character, I'm really interested to know more about him, but never get to.
Like, Carol, what else is there to know about Daryl?
I don't know. He was abused as a kid. He has all these issues, but he's got a big heart, but he's very guarded. I mean,
you seem like you know a lot about him already. What we don't know is T-Dog, like, did he leave behind a wife? Did he have any siblings? Was he married? Does he have a baby mom? I mean, what did he go to college? Like, who is T-Dog? We don't know these things.
I mean,
he's so big, you want to hug him.
What's funny is, for a character written expressly for the show and not even in the book,
who?
T-Dog...
Wait, yeah, T-Dog was not in the book?
He's not in the...
You kidding me?
Uh-oh.
He's a character that they made up for the show.
Wow.
He literally and truly has no function in the story. I'm like,
sense.
Wait, you wrote this character in.
For no reason whatsoever. Oh. What are you doing? Yeah, that dude's going to die.
That's...
I thought he was Tyrese, to be honest. And that's another character that hasn't shown up.
Oh, man. Well, I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, drop the T-Dog.
Mm. Well, maybe he'll... God, maybe. I mean,
all
like,
the thing he's going to do is die a heroic death. That's all he's going to do.
Well, I hope not.
Yes,
he is, because they've been writing him as a coward the whole time. And all they're going to do is, at the end, he died a hero.
I better not do that. Yeah, you know who I miss? Oh, well. You know who I miss? I want to see back?
Dude from the first episode?
Morgan. Yep.
Yeah.
Miss
I want to
so
see
much.
Him. I mean, like I said, we saw him in like an episode and a half, and we got a stronger connection. We knew his wife, we knew his kid, where he lived, all that kind
the
of thing.
Turn, the doorknob turning,
the
outside.
The inner angst that dude had to deal with. I want to see Morgan back again. I miss him.
He was so interesting. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to find him for a while there.
Yeah, he's got the walkie-talkie. He's got the other walkie-talkie after all this time. Is that thing going to crackle up at some point? And he's going to be like, dude, I've been following you the whole time.
Or he's at the prison or whatever that place is.
No, he's flying the helicopter.
He's a pilot. There you go.
That's nice.
I wish he would return too. I think you're right. But God, I hope they don't kill off T-Dog before actually, you know, doing what they wanted to do with him originally. Why write in a character that has no purpose?
Let me be negative and say maybe he was just a token?
Well, that's what it looks like, and I certainly hope that's not the case. Because
it's hard to believe because
this
the show is
show,
so well-crafted. It
yes.
seems like everything, they know what they're doing. They've got pieces laid out in advance. So, I mean, if he's going to have a big hero moment, that's appreciated. But don't make him so superfluous before that. I mean,
I think he's an evil
do.
Scientist observing
yeah,
the crew.
Yeah, I really don't more. Think that's
Well, even the fact that... You know, you're not quite... Everybody is convinced that he's a coward. I'm not convinced he's a coward. There's a fine line between wanting to stay alive and cowardice. And I think that would actually be an interesting sort of vein to follow. But they haven't done anything with that. He hasn't done anything.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should call in to the Talking Dead and ask them what's up with T-Dog.
Yeah, what the hell are you trying to do with
T-Dog?
Please?
What's up with
T-Dog? Okay. But notice how none of us want Carol around anymore. Like,
yeah,
we don't care about
helping.
Her character.
She's
Yeah,
not
she doesn't
helping.
do anything. I don't know. I mean, like in the real world, you just can't like, ooh, I hope that lady get eaten by a zombie, and you know, because you have to actually live with annoying people in your life, so they just kind of hang out until
There are a
they go
couple of people
away.
I wish would get eaten by zombies.
Yeah,
Yeah,
my life would be so awesome if that happened. But then there'll be zombies, and then it'll be weird and whatever. So.
just throw tennis balls at him.
Lightning!
Oh, yeah. So
Yep.
that is that. Any last thoughts?
I'm happy this show is on.
It is off now.
No, I just mean in
It exists,
existence.
yeah.
Yeah,
Okay.
because I told you, Pagan's getting kind of slim,
No.
and for them to have a good one, I'm really enjoying Walking Dead. Thanks, guys. Good
Yeah.
work. Good work.
Awesome
I
job.
can't wait for season three.
Yeah.
I know that it's going to be awesome. I just do.
Have to wait all the way until October.
I know. Oh, by the way, and I'm not affiliated with these people in any way. It's just that I like it very much. There's a podcast called We're Alive, and it's kind of a zombie story following, and it's in its third season. And I listen to it on the way to work, and I listen to it when I'm not watching Walking Dead. So if anybody is interested in a zombie story or whatever, I think you can still get all the episodes back through season one for free. It's called We're Alive, and it's really good.
I'll put a link in the show notes.
Yay.
That's our show, guys. I hope you enjoyed it. We love your feedback. Give us a comment on scifipartyline.com. We are on Twitter at Sci-Fi Party Line and Facebook. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you at the party next time. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Don't let me be alone, alone by the pool. Yeah, it started without us. She is drinking red, red wine.
It sounds like you're drinking. I'm fine, but you're doing some drunk talk.
You just started. That is a classic UB40, my dear. That's the way they sound. I'm just
Oh,
reproducing the original.
that's the way they sound.
That's exactly. It was pristine. You couldn't tell the difference.
I think I need to drink a few drinks.
How
How you been?
Good, how are you guys?
Well, Carl's drunk and
I am not drunk. I am just having a wee nip of the grape right here. So
wee
nothing.
nip of the grape.
A wee nip of the
Dude,
grape. That's it.
when was the last time I said I love you? Because I just called to say I love
You see, it's already flowing. It's
Oh, I'm gonna give you guys
already.
some alone time.
No.
Oh, we want you in on this, baby. You're joining us. You in on the love.
No.
Did you guys like my avatar thing?
No, what did I say?
Oh, I was frightened and disturbed.
It
I was
was not
frightened and
part of
disturbed.
that. And then I was like, I had to like rush to get stuff done.
Oh,
I
it's really
watched it in
funny.
its entirety, and I am still not well. I am
It
disturbed.
was something you needed to watch. Okay, I didn't watch anything just yet. I haven't checked Twitter. I've saw that you've tweeted, but I haven't checked it yet. I will.
It makes fun of LARPing. Do you
Oh,
guys not know what that
LARPing. Yeah,
is?
I know what LARPing is.
But with
There's
avatar
LARP. You know,
characters.
there's no science fiction group here, but there is a LARP group. And
What?
I'm just almost desperate enough
No.
to talk to
No.
Oh.
No. No, you're wrong.
TV with. And so I'm like, okay, well maybe one of those people may watch Walking Dead. Maybe I'll just go just to like, and I just
No, that's how they get you. You'll come back all blue. Don't do it.
I'm not gonna do it. I haven't done it. I just let it go. I was
You'll
just
come
like
back blue. You'll come back in like a kilt or something, and
I already have a kilt. Anyway,
Oh, yeah.
that guy. But
It was funny. I really, what I was doing actually is I got really mad today at work, and I go to my happy place, which happens to live on YouTube,
Nice.
in the form of Lightning Bolt LARPer or Lightning Bolt LARP. And it's this dude who apparently is like casting spells on somebody. But in order to represent this, it's tennis balls, and he's like just pelting the deer with tennis balls. And he's going, lightning bolt, lightning bolt, lightning bolt. I just wanted to do that to somebody today. Just like pelt them with tennis balls and go,
That's kind of embarrassing.
That's awesome. Was he in costume at all while this was happening?
Well, the dude in the video was in costume. Everybody was, they were LARPing. And...
Awesome. Oh, wait. Everybody else is it? Because, see, it's only cool if he was just in costume. And it was just, like, people in his office. And he just pelts away.
He looked kind of like William Wallace. Like, I mean, he was definitely anachronistic, I guess is the word, if you can say it that way. But anyway, it's hilarious. It's my happy place. Whenever I get upset, I'm like, I want to end this meeting. Lightning bolt!
End of line.